Gary, and I'm pleased to welcome Andy all the way from Australia. How you doing, Andy?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, good to see you again, Gary. Yeah.
Thank you. It's been, three years?
2 years now, yeah.
3 years.
2 years, I left in the middle of COVID, so that's that was kind of my exit time when I decided, I was going to go home and have a little break from it all.
And you're looking really well. The weather's treated you good.
Yeah, I've been out in the sun a lot working on boats, so yeah, quite tanned.
Well, and for the listeners, Andy, whereabouts in Australia are you?
I'm from the north of Queensland in a place called Airlie Beach.
Yeah.
It's quite a sailing community there. We've got 70 islands. Grew up sailing here my whole life and always wanted to be a professional sailor. And that's what led me to going to Mallorca and working on super yachts in a professional environment over there. For 6 years, I think I was all up working in and out of Palma and east coast of America, Newport, Rhode Islands, and then doing the Met Caribbean hop between those two environments each year.
So living the dream.
Well, yeah. Yeah, some would say that.
Yeah. So 7 a.m. in Mallorca, what time is that?
It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. So you guys are 9 hours behind.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Like during the summer, does it change?
I think there's like daylight saving. Yeah, there's like daylight savings in the south, but we don't really follow that up here. So it's normally 9 hours or 10 hours, I think. Yeah.
Which year did you travel to Mallorca?
It's hard for me to remember now. It would have been 8 years ago now, like 2016, I think. Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah, I was like 28.
Yeah.
I was 28 when I arrived to Palma. And yeah, left when I was 33. Yeah, 33.
That's right.
No, 35.
That's right.
At my last birthday in Palma, when I was 34. Yeah.
Birthday.
Yeah, it was an absolute nonsense for our right? We rented a villa and got pretty out of hand. It was good. It was good fun. Yeah.
So take us back then to Andy, 28, lands in Palma, Mallorca.
Yeah, well, yeah, I want to hear my story, I guess. I always, as I said, always loved yachting, always loved sailing, and always wanted to be a professional sailor my whole life, and decided that after working my career here in Australia that the next step for that would be to move to super yachts, mainly those that have racing programs, as I've always been a passionate sailing boat race. So, yeah, I guess the biggest thing for me was my mother had just passed away, and I'd had this plan in my life that I was going to move over there and go chase my dream there. So I had this plan all along, and through my mother's sickness, which was quite long, she was always saying to me, just go follow your dreams. And I was like, well, I couldn't really do that because I wanted to wait until she'd kind of passed away and kind of dealt with that side of things with the family, as I'd always kind of been my family's rock, kind of been like the middle ground for all my siblings, having two older sisters and a twin brother, Michael, and quite a extended family over New Zealand and Australia. So yeah, I guess my mother passed away and I was here and feeling a bit down about myself and decided it was time, and I had the cash saved up and knew that it was something that I always planned to do. And I had lots of friends from Airlie Beach. Quite a lot of us have traveled over and worked in the industry there that hooked me up with a place to stay. And I went and did my courses that was required, the European courses, Yacht Master and SCCW and all that straight off the bat. And yeah, then just landed a gig, and in my second week of being there, I think I was pretty lucky. And got a job in Palma. Within a month, I was on a boat heading across the Atlantic to go to the Caribbean, to Antigua.
So all appeared to happen very quickly, probably arriving, finding work, settling. And
Yeah. Like I'd kind of had my ducks in a row and things kind of lined up, and also friends in that community. So it wasn't, I was expecting it to take a lot longer, but it really didn't. I've come from a vast sailing background. I've been sailing my whole life.
Yeah.
So given my skill set, I was snapped up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then I met a guy in my STCW who was needed a first mate and jumped on that sailing boat and bounced straight over to the Caribbean pretty much within my first month of arriving. Was off to the Caribbean for the Caribbean season.
And how was Andy doing internally? You said your mum had passed away, moved across the other side of the world, and I'm sure you were still dealing with the loss of your mum.
Yeah, I think I was just trying to keep myself busy. And I think also because I knew my mother wasn't quite well for a long time, I'd kind of already processed in my head that she was going to pass. And we had a really lovely funeral for her here where my boss that I was working for actually let me take the boat out that I was working on because it could take 80 people out for the day for free. And we went round to her favorite bay, Woodwark Bay, and scattered her ashes there. And, you know, everybody, all my friends and family joined, and anybody who'd come up for the funeral joined. And we had a really nice farewell for her. And, so I guess kind of in my head, like I'd kind of done that. Like, I guess, I don't know, like I was yep, I've done that and I've dealt with it. But, you know, looking back on it now, maybe I hadn't given myself enough time to process the grief of it all, as I am a mummy's boy, and my mum was a big part of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so naturally we've spoken, and family is very central to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And working on the boats, how do you manage that in terms of being away from family and we were complete strangers, I imagine, for the first part and different environment, different culture?
Yeah, well, I think initially, you know, you're so overwhelmed by the environment you're in and you're just excited to be there. You know, like I was absolutely stoked. I'd got a crossing straight away. I remember like the captain was like, oh, you're a mad king fisherman. Like, we're going to be crossing the Atlantic, heaps of fish to catch. So I went and spent like 3,000 euros on lures or something at the tackle shop. And I was like, this is bananas. But he's just like, yeah, just go ham on it, you know, like get the boat set up. This is something we've got to do. So I was just like, you know, completely overwhelmed by the situation and excited that I was, you know, doing what I'd planned to do and about to go set off on my first Atlantic crossing and have a great time, which I did. Yeah.
So for Andy, when did it start changing for you? So you had literally great new environments, you were snapped up quickly because of your experience, having a great time. When did it start changing for you?
I mean, I guess I kind of recognized it almost immediately. Within the industry, there is, you know, like basically you give a bunch of people a super high disposable income and then you make them work all the time. And then you put them in these foreign locations. And what do? When they have time off, they go and party. You know, so I kind of recognized that as soon as I got to Antigua, which is somewhere I'd never been before. I had no expectations, no understanding of what the environment was going to be. Got there and, you know, you put 50 super yachts on this small island in the middle of the Caribbean. And all of a sudden, you know, you're out partying all night with your crew, with other crews. Yeah. And you just basically, yeah, it's a very big party, which I was also very inept with. You know, I've always been quite a social person. And thoroughly enjoyed that style of the lifestyle quite a lot. So I guess I kind of recognized it immediately. And yeah, it just sort of fell into that cycle of partying a lot. There's lots of cocaine in the industry, offered throughout everywhere in the industry. I always wanted to write a book about Antigua called One Night in Antigua.
Okay.
About the crazy stories, like different stories, not just for myself, from other people that have been there. And I even remember when I was in Antigua, my first season, I was sitting down. We were hungover as shit, sitting down having dinner with a bunch of crew. And we could overhear the group of English people on the table next to us. And they'd obviously booked a holiday to Antigua, not understanding that this is where all the yachties hang out.
Right.
And you could just hear them going like, I just never understood that there would just be this many, you know, drunk yachties getting around. And basically, the whole town is overrun by yachties in that season. Yeah, obviously not everybody gets drunk and not everybody gets on the coke or whatever, but it definitely is a big part of it. You know, it's a bit of Neverland. And then when your season's over, you're happy to leave Antigua. You're like, get me out of here. I got to get back to Europe because it's a little bit more stable. So yeah, you're definitely excited to arrive and happy to leave, which is a strange thing.
So for you, Andy, when is it okay, that's part of the culture, the city, it goes with the territory. And when does it start becoming not okay, not safe?
Oh, not okay, not safe. Yeah, I guess now that I can reflect on it, like, yeah, binge drinking more than 3 nights in a week is going to have a massive detrimental effect on your health and your well-being. And you're not sleeping so well, so then you become shorter with your crew and, you know, like, you're obviously in these lesser sleep patterns. That's what I always actually used to love about the crossings. I used to call them our sea talks, you know,
right?
Because by the time we left Palma to get to the Caribbean, if we'd done all our preparations and get to the Antigua, probably a good month's passed where you haven't drunk at all. And, you know, you don't take any drugs on the boat or anything like that. So you really do just have 4 weeks off and you're out in the middle of the ocean and you're looking at the stars at night. So you really have that connection to everything and you really just have that more clarity of what you love doing, which is why you're connected to it. And then you get there and it gets busy and, you know, you've got 2 weeks to prepare for the boss to come for 3 months. And so you use those 2 weeks however you wish. To go back to your original question, when it's too much, I mean, I'd say probably, you know, if you're drinking more than 2 nights a week, it's far too much. If you're doing cocaine more than once a month, that's way too, you know, it's something I never experienced in Australia was substance abuse through cocaine, which I ended up having massive issues with throughout my career towards the end of it, especially because I had a few personal things happen where I was using it quite a lot. And also going to the pub or going to a pub with your mates and somebody just having a bag of cocaine and that being completely normal. Like it being weird that you don't have a bag of cocaine on you when you go to the pub. That would be weird. You know what I mean? Like it was just a normal thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And obviously that leads to, you know, mental health issues, anxiety and lack of sleep and psychosis as well.
So. Yeah. And naturally life goes on while you guys are on the boat. How do people deal with family issues, bad news from home?
Well, they don't. So that's an interesting thing that I dealt with a couple of times within the industry. Was one time I was leaving, we were leaving Newport, Rhode Island, and we were heading to Antigua on delivery. And the sat phone on the boat rung and we didn't know why it was ringing because it was weird. Like not many people have the sat phone number. And it was the old captain of the boat who was ringing about the chef's brother. And the chef's brother had just had a baby and caught up in that process of his wife just having a baby. He was quite ill, but didn't put any attention to himself. And he actually passed away 3 days after, you know, his wife had given birth. Yeah. So we're in the middle of nowhere on our way to Antigua. Sat phone rings and then the captain has to deliver this information to the chef. And that completely changed the whole vibe of the boat. Not in a bad way. It was kind of good. Everybody was like, okay, it's just some heavy news for her. And our goal was then to get the boat to Antigua as quickly as possible to get her off so she could go and attend her brother's funeral, basically. So that was kind of one of the first big realizations that I'd kind of always understood it, because when my mother was ill in Australia, she had a bit of a scare. One night I got a phone call from my boss and he's like, you've got to get to Townsville tonight. And I was out at sea because your mother's gone downhill. Your sister's rung me. And luckily my boss come out in a speedboat, swapped me out. I took the speedboat back, jumped in his car and drove 3 hours to Townsville and spent the night with my mum, spent 2 days with my mum, and she pulled through and, you know, lived another 6 months. And it's in that realization that when that happened, I said to my sister, I was like, look, if I'm at sea and my mum does pass away because we're expecting her to, I don't want to know about it because I was the captain at the time. Right. And as soon as I got that news that I had to get to Townsville, my mind was completely taken off the task at hand, which was taking care of the boat and all the lives and soul on board. You know, like I was, you know, like I physically couldn't think of anything else. I was doing my job out of from an auditorial response, just like a robot, and just completely distracted from the task at hand. And then that kind of revisited that time when we were on our way to Antigua. And then in my last years, that came up again. So we were about to head off to Antigua in my last season, it was. And we were planning on going from Antigua to the Caribbean all the way down to New Zealand for the America's Cup. And I said to the captain, I was like, you know, who have you given the sat phone number? Because A, you need to realize that if you give my family a sat phone number, then you might have to deliver bad news to me.
Yeah.
And then B, I said to him, like, I should be on the insurance to take responsibility for the boat and become the standing master in case you have an issue at home. And that sort of never crossed his mind because it had never happened. And he was like, oh, well, why would we need to do that? I was just like, and I gave him that same example. And I was like, look, you know, you need to teach me your job so I can take over your role. And then I need to teach my deckhand my job. So if that happens, then we can all filter up through that and take on each other's role. and stand in for a week, even if we have to go pull up in a port, anchor up for a week, and do nothing while you go and deal with that. And yeah, the thought had never crossed his mind. Like he'd never really thought about it at all. And on that last crossing over to Antigua, my father passed away. And because I hadn't given the sat phone number to my family from my previous experience with my mother, I didn't have a clue of the world. I had the best crossing. We had an amazing time. We had a great group of people on board. And then I got to the other side and turned on my phone, and then all the messages blew up from my family. And I rung my family that day, and they were at my dad's funeral, like they're at his wake after the funeral. And my captain said to me, oh, if you need to jump on a plane and go to Australia, then, you know, so be it. And I was like, well, there kind of isn't any point because they've already buried him. They've already had his wake. And we had a regatta. We had a regatta to get prepared for like a week later. And that was something I'd kind of, because I'd dealt with it before, I was like, look, you know, like my dad's happy that I'm doing what I love and that I'm away from all this doing, you know, doing what I love. And that's kind of part and parcel with it, with working at sea. But I don't think everybody that works in yachting gets that. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people come to yachting without that knowledge that you really are going to be on the boat all the time or away from your family and miss funerals and miss weddings and miss birthdays. And that really just how it is. That's just how it is. And the only way I could see out of that for the industry is by, as I said before, is making sure that everybody on the boat has the person under them or everybody's capable to fill another role. That so if for some reason the chief stewardess's brother passes away while you're in the middle of Sardinia for a week, she can just get on a plane and go do her thing and deal with it and either choose to come back or, you know, or take her time and deal with the grief. And you should all be able to slot in and, you know, take on that role as much as you can. You know, there's always this whole, like, once you're on charter or the boss is on, then that's everything, you know. I think the industry really needs to work. We'll have backup people that they know of that have worked on the boat before that can call and bring in or something like that.
I mean, it's great, Andrew, that you had the foresight. But from what you're sharing, it should be standard that with somebody joining that, there should be
that. Yeah, well,
knowledge should be shared.
Yeah, well, you think it would be, but I guess it happens so rarely. And it was because it only happened with my mother and the other time on the way to Antigua that I was like, I even said to the captain, I was like, you need to choose, like, who you're going to give the sat phone number to, because it's also hard on them. They've got to deliver some bad news to people in the middle of nowhere, and they can't really do much to. And then it changes the whole environment on the boat too. So, you know, obviously these are people you work with, you care for. They've gone through something terrible. You might have your boss on, and then all of a sudden, like, what can you do? And your whole somber mood changes, and the whole mood changing around the boat has a massive reflection on the charter and or the boss working for you or whoever it may be at the time, and kind of changes the whole vibe of things. And if they have an understanding, know that there is a way to deal with that if these issues do arise. I don't know of any other boats that do. Maybe big power boats have a way of dealing with this. I'm not sure. But it was kind of like my knowledge of how I dealt with it going to it.
And thereafter, is there any form of counselling or support service that's strictly available to yachties?
Not on the programs I worked with. Like, I was lucky that I met you when I was in a bit of a state and had a couple of friends pull me aside, like, I'm worried about you. You're drinking too much. You're using way too much cocaine. We're really worried about you. And then I met you and I was like, oh, I better go talk to someone about it. And I'd already been to a couple of councils before, but like, I just didn't really vibe with them. Like the way they were trying to solve the problem, because I know where my problem lies. And I was like, no, that's not it. So I was kind of a bit deflated from that as well. And just like, oh, well, you know, and being, you know, Australian bloke, just like, well, you've got to deal with this yourself. You know what I mean? And, you know, I didn't feel like I could share it with my crew so much, my problems, because it would be looked at negatively, or I might lose my job or some things like that, which probably isn't the case. I'm pretty sure they were all aware. but you know, like there definitely was nothing in place to help deal with that. And yeah, there definitely should be some kind of free counseling sessions paid for by the boat on every boat. Like the people we work for are the richest people in the world, you know, and we get asked to go and work 3 months straight for them at sea and wait on every beck and call and look after their boats to 100% immaculate perfection. You know, our mental health is massive, and living in a small environment, group of people where you always have your issues. And as you said, these are necessarily people that you would like, these are people you might not normally hang out with in your life, but now you're living on a boat working with them. You know what I mean? So, you know, all those adaptive changes and that, definitely there should be counseling. I think you would probably see a lot less substance abuse if there was something freely available joining every boat when the captain pulled you aside after signing a contract and said, look, you can have 2 or 1 free session a week. Whenever we're in this port, we have this counselor available and encouraged to do that. You know what I mean? Because it gives them a space to go vent and get these things off their chest. The things they're dealing with, whether it be the internal problems of working with the people they've got or not being at home with their families and missing things, you know, like it definitely help a lot.
Thinking about you, Andy, that fear that if I do share it or speak with someone, I may lose my job. That's immense pressure adding on top of whatever you're going through at that time.
Well, absolutely. You know, like it's weird to think that, yeah, I don't know, just like, I guess from an outside perspective, it was quite visible. But at the same time, like if you're, I don't know, if you're kind of dealing with things well and you're still getting your job done, then, you know, because there is so much substance abuse in the industry and alcoholics and everything like that, it's kind of like a little bit like, well, as long as it's not in front of the boss, you know, like, then we don't mind. Like if he, when he's off the boat, he can go do his own thing. We don't care. But if he still turns up for work on time and gets his job done and is good at it, you know, and doesn't bring those issues on the boat when we need to go to work, then it's an unsaid thing. You know what I mean? But that's, you should see these things from your crew, you know, like a lot of captains don't, I don't know, they don't have a lot of heart. Their goals on looking after the owner, looking after the boat and their needs. And a lot of them have kind of been put into this position of leading a boat. But really, if they look after their crew, then the boat will run itself. All they need to do is look after their crew and everything else will take care of itself. So if you do start seeing is, you know, hereditary things like your crew are constantly turning up hungover, they have, you know, depression issues from relationships or family issues, then they should feel comfortable enough to say something about it. And you should be able to go, look, yeah, sweet, jump on a plane, go sort your issues out with your family or go use our free counseling sessions or something. Because it's just an immense industry to work in personally. Like it's absolutely burnt me out. Like I don't think I'll ever go back to it, to be honest.
That's a strong statement, and that's when we met Andy. And if you don't mind sharing briefly, I remember one particular time we were sharing and almost a self-loathing you had for Andy, because you look back and thought, I can't believe I allowed them to treat me that way. I can't believe I allowed somebody to speak to me in that manner. And it was that frustration you really had with yourself.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Like I'm quite a strong-willed person. And, you know, some of the ways I was treated, most of the time it was really good. But there were some instances where I was, you know, talked down to, treated poorly by other crew members and that. And no, like, action on those things, you know. And it took a lot for me to get as far in that career as I, you know, as I did. Because normally if somebody speaks down to me and that, I'm going to call you out on, you know what I mean? Like, I don't give a fuck who you are. I don't give a fuck if you're a billionaire. Like, I'll call you out on, you know? So you've definitely got to kind of like shut yourself down a little bit to those things, I guess. I don't know. When you're working in that industry, and this, and that's the same thing, not just for blokes, but for chicks, the misogynistic attitudes in some of the bosses towards women on the boats is bloody disgusting. And if they've got to like just smile and be polite about it, you know, like that's something that you shouldn't have to deal with at all, you know. And then you have a captain who's not going to call the boss out on it, you know what I mean? Because he's worried about losing his high paying job, you know.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like that whole realm of it all, you know what I mean? Where you accept a lot of shit because you're supposed to be fortunate that you're working on these beautiful boats and these beautiful locations, and you should be lucky that you're there. You know, when realistically, it's the other way around. They're incredibly lucky to have people, especially like myself and other people that are so highly skilled and so amazing at their jobs, and all they've ever wanted to do is be professional sailors, professional mariners, and run these amazing boats for these people. They're super lucky that we exist. You know what I mean? And especially now with the more technology that are entering these boats. Yeah. You can't just grab a guy off the street and be like, oh, come and be my engineer, you know, or come and be my, you know, first mate on this 300-foot sail yacht. Like the qualifications they're asking for and the skills that they're asking for now are pushing guys into their, you know, 30 years of age when they're reaching the prime of their career. And then the whole kick-on thing is like when you're 30 and you're away from home 10 months of the year, like, how do you have a life? Do you have a house? Do you have a home? Do you have a car? Like, no, you don't. You don't have any of those things. You can't have a stable relationship. You know, I remember meeting so many beautiful girls that I fell in love with, and they're like, oh, I can't wait to see you next week. Oh, sorry, I won't be here. I'm off now. You know, like, that's not normal. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
To add, thinking about what you said, it's the yachting industry wasn't all bad. It served you well. But you said you would.
Yeah, absolutely.
For you then, you've mentioned about counseling, having access to that at least 1 or 2 hours a week or a month for people who've got that space, and captains taking more responsibility. And you said, if you look after the crew, the boat will look after itself.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you would say that needs to change? Because we're all from, everybody's aware, most people are aware about the drugs, the alcohol abuse, but it appears from the outside, not much has been done about it. So what would you say needs to fundamentally change in order that this is not becoming typically associated with the yachting industry, the drugs, the alcohol abuse?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's just the yachting industry that has this issue. You know what I mean? Like, I was a big drinker before I entered yachting. It just got exacerbated when I was there because that's what everyone was doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, even myself now, like I still get drunk every now and then, but it's not on the same levels or same self-destruction. But what I think the yachting industry could do, I'm not sure. I mean, this is something only through, I think, people talking to councils and other professionals in this industry have a really need a big think about. Yeah, it would. I mean, like now I work in tugboats and I have to drug and alcohol test, so I don't do any drugs anymore. I don't drink for a day before I go to work. And that's simply because I would just lose my job. Like, I just wouldn't have a job. And then I would lose my job in that industry forever because we're in a mining spec. I don't think you could bring that in immediately in yachting because you would lose probably 80% of your people. Yeah. But maybe something like that. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's a hard one because you want to give people enough rope that they, in their free time, they're available to do whatever they like. But then, you know, you don't want them obviously leading to systemic substance abuse issues, which is where mine all started. You know what I mean? I remember walking into a bar when I was in Parma and I first got there, and I was in this one little bar and it's only got one toilet, and I'm waiting for this guy to come out of it, and he comes out and he goes, oh, I bumped out too much coke on the toilet there. There's a line in there for you. And like, I just got from Australia and I was like, this place is fucking great. There's a free line of cocaine like on the toilet waiting for me. You know what I mean? And like, I just remember laughing at myself thinking about this. Like, now I'm just like, yeah, that's like, yeah, just unheard of. Like, that's how it was in one of those yachty bars. Like, yeah.
I mean, there's many things that I'm taking from this and what I'm pointing out, the listeners doing a lot to feed on. When you said, if you look after the crew, boats will look after itself.
It's the number one thing. Like, it was the same when I was running boats in Australia here, and I had one captain that was really good at that in when I was in Europe, even to the point where like our stewardess, I remember this in one stage, we were doing like a 3-month charter and our stewardess was getting a little bit tired and a little bit broken down, and she was getting a little bit short with us. And he said to me, what do you think we should do? And I said, well, let's just get her off the boat for the day. Like, tell her she's got the day off and we'll book her a beach club. And she can go drink a bottle of rosé and have a nice lunch and just get away from the boat, get away from the environment. And that was just unheard of because we've got our boss on. Like, what? And you know what I mean? And he's like, well, who's going to serve the boss? And I was like, I'll do it. You know what I mean? yeah, I'll get in with it. Like, it's, they're not going to care. Like, as long as the boat's happy, they're going to feel that vibe. And they, and you could see that they were feeling the vibe. There was a bit of tension there. So yeah, we sent the chef and the stewardess off the boat for the day and said, look, don't come back till 10 o'clock at night. And yeah, they got off the boat for the day. We picked them up at 10 o'clock at night. They were a little drunk, whatever. You know, we got them back on the boat. The boss had dinner and everything like that. Me and the captain did dinner and served them all day. And I think that kind of made the owner realize, oh, maybe we should give them a bit of a break. We've been here for like 3 months. And the next day they got off the boat and they said, look, we're going to go ashore and stay with our friends for 2 days. And then they went and left us for 2 days. But it wasn't until we kind of made that initial action that, yeah, I guess they kind of recognized it, you know?
And Andy, I'm thinking that you wouldn't go back, but I believe that you still have
a... I probably would.
Vital role.
I probably would. I don't know.
Vital role, yeah, to play. You really do.
I mean, I often toy with the idea of going back, but I'm not sure whether it's for me anymore. Like a good friend of mine said, you don't ever reread a chapter of a book. Yeah. So I don't know whether that chapter's closed, but I feel like it kind of is.
Yeah.
Yeah, my life's changed now. I'm 36 now. It's time for me to have a house, a dog, chickens... maybe a wife, you know, yeah, what I mean, like normal people things, like, and a life. And maybe sailing for me now is just a social thing I do, you know, competitive sailing, something I do for fun again and not for my career. We'll see.
Right, so finally, Andy, you're somebody who's sought professional help, self-counseling, but you're still having counseling now.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Would you say to encourage other men who listen to this to reach out?
I mean, just do it, you know, like if you think you're drinking too much or you have these issues at home, even, I mean, the sooner you can get into counseling, the better off it's going to be. Ultimately, I was always a Australian male guy that was like, oh, I don't need counseling. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's, you know, like growing up with them old school mentalities, you know, that's if you're weak, you can deal with things yourself. But more and more, like after I went to counseling, my friend Brad, I put him onto it. And that helped him a lot with his issues as well. And other friends now, I'm like straight up, if anybody's got any problems with, not even just substance abuse, if you've got a lot going on in your head, go and talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to do you the world of good, you know, especially if you're in yachting, like the pressures you're under. And also you're on a high disposable income, you know, like it's going to cost you $80 an hour to go see someone once a week, twice a week. And that might only be when you're on land and not working. So, you know, take opportunity of that. And if you do find accounts that you get along with, they're going to be able to do sessions over the phone with you, which is what I was actually doing when I came back to Australia. I worked on another boat here. I found another counselor I really connected with, and he would always just set aside an hour, and he was like super flexible knowing that I was in the industry. And I'd just be like, oh, okay, I've got an hour off this afternoon. He'd be like, sweet, clear his schedule and join me in, and then kind of set me up for where I was. Because when I came back from yachting, I felt like I'd failed. You know, I was like, I was supposed to be there as a professional yachtsman. I was really hating myself when I got back that I fucked up this wonderful career I was going to have or whatever. And that was probably even harder than the substance abuse, because also I was probably drying out and sobering out at the same time.
Yeah. Andy, real pleasure. Thank you for being available. Make yourself available. Be willing,
yeah, no
to
problem,
engage and share, and for your openness and honesty. And you,
yeah,
you don't, not just talking about it, you live with it. So that will really be a great encouragement to guys and women who are in that position.
Yeah, anybody in those positions, absolutely get out there, get some help if you need it. And yeah, hopefully any of the captains or anyone in this industry can take a little bit of grain of salt from it. And as I said, these people work for loads of money. Let's redistribute the wealth and have a mental health policy on board and an option to go see these counselling and therapy like that. Because a lot of these times, these issues can be dealt with and nipped on the butt way before they become a massive issue.
So thank you. That's Bro Talk with Gary. Honourable guest Andy here, all the way from Australia. And maybe don't tackle it alone. Reach out for help.